Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Oh, yeah. This is Carol the Coach, and I am Carol Jurgensen Sheets. I'm a sexual addiction certified therapist, and I'm here to help you to work through issues that are probably related to sexual or love addiction. And every week, I either interview people that have the disorder, think that they might, or I work with people who are experts in the field. And I got to tell you, tonight we are going to be interviewing Audrey Tate. And she is a CSAT, that's right, she's a Certified Sexual Addictions Therapist, and the owner and director of Inspirational Insights Counseling out of Alberta, Canada. She has written several books, including I Am Wonderfully Me, Positive Affirmations for Me, Volume 1, Reflective Meditations Unraveling My Trauma, Healing My Trauma, of course, Letting Go, Forgiveness. And she's done Believing in Myself and Understanding My Authentic Self. So this woman really knows her stuff when it comes to sexual addiction and what you need to do on an individual basis to promote your own recovery. Now, you know, the trauma element is so much a part of addiction, including sexual addiction. We know that about 80% of all addiction has some root in trauma. And so often it is dealt with in a way that does not really cover the topic. It affects our lives and everything that we do, from the way we sit, walk, and stand to the way we react to present situations that are over or understimulating for us. So, Audrey writes, it impedes our function in many unknown ways. Tonight's program is going to help you to deal with those elements of trauma that are holding you back and keeping you stuck, and will lead you to forgiveness and letting go faster, so that you can move on with your lives. Because let's face it, you probably know, if you're listening to the show, there are some things in your own life that has occurred with someone else or within yourself that has required moving on. But oftentimes, that's also required forgiveness. And Audrey Tate speaks to these issues from personal experience, from the heart, and from her extensive training. So we are going to be talking with her just a little bit later in the show. And hopefully the things that she's here to talk to you about will be some of the individual things that you can do to make life better. And if you've listened to the show before, you know that you're not all alone in this. Besides some good bibliotherapy, you need to be working with a sponsor, a good therapist, preferably certified sexual addictions therapist. You need to be attending 12-step groups, seeking the help and advice from a sponsor, and you need to be making those calls, because when you let go and let God, God helps you to find the right people to get your life back in order. And, you know, this is not just a moral issue. It really is not. As a matter of fact, I've got to tell you that we are learning more and more about brain chemistry, which is part of addiction. And so you're going to hear me talking about things that you can do to take responsibility for yourself and to increase your sense of health and well-being. But you're also going to be learning about the brain and how the brain functions and why you may have a substance abuse problem, drug or alcohol problem, gambling addiction, sexual addiction, love addiction, or even workaholism. Now, I was reading a fascinating New York Times article, and it says, these days it is easy to get irritated with the exaggerated interpretations of brain imaging. You know, you've probably heard about it. Somebody will have a single MRI scan, and there's inflated claims about the biological basis behind the mental processes. But one of the things that they're studying right now is the biology of depression. And let's face it, most people that have had sexual addiction, they have either been depressed in their childhood, their adolescence, or their adulthood. And even if you aren't, let's say you're listening because you have a partner who has a sexual addiction. What they are finding, which is absolutely fascinating, is that out of Emory University, scientists are using brain scanning techniques to identify several components of the specialized circuit in depressive illnesses. They call one of the areas Area 25, and that part of the brain mediates unconscious and motor responses to emotional stress. And then the other is the right anterior insula, which is a region where self-awareness and interpersonal experience come together. Now, here's what's so fascinating. In a recent study of people with depression, one of the scientists gave each person one of two types of treatment, either cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a form of psychotherapy that trains people to view their feelings in more positive terms. I teach this course. It is really when you decide, okay, if you change your thoughts, you'll change your feelings. If you change your feelings, you'll change your behaviors. When you change your behaviors, you feel better, which, of course, then cycles back into more positive thoughts, which promote more positive feelings, which promote more positive behaviors, and that cycle continues. So this researcher gave part of the participants CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, while the other group of people received an antidepressant medication. And the researcher found that people who started with a below-average baseline activity in the right anterior insula, they were more likely to respond to cognitive behavioral therapy, but not to antidepressant. And yet people with an above-average activity responded to the antidepressant, but not to the cognitive behavioral therapy. Thus, this researcher found that she could predict a depressed person's response to specific treatments when she looked at their baseline activity in the right anterior insula. Okay, now I know that's fairly technical, but what that really means is when different parts of the brain are studied, researchers are beginning to predict whether talk therapy, specifically cognitive behavioral therapy, is going to work, or whether you need to give an antidepressant. And when we know what these measurable markers are, it is much easier then to go in for the treatment of choice. You know, psychotherapy is a biological treatment, a brain therapy, and it definitely produces lasting, detectable physical changes in our brain. However, obviously, if people are functioning out of a certain part of their brain, they might need that antidepressant, first and foremost, to move beyond the depression so that they can then activate the healthy choices to make their life better. Maybe that's going to a 12-step group. Maybe that's getting involved with a certified sexual addiction therapist. This is all very exciting stuff. So I would highly recommend that you Google the New York Times and look up the article, The New Science of the Mind. You know, I remember when I was training with Dr. Patrick Carnes, he said, in 10 years, therapists are going to be brain scientists. Now, he did not mean that we were going to have this unbelievable ability to dissect and study the brain. But what he meant by that was that we're going to have to know brain research and how scientific brain studies substantiate what we need to do with clients. And how do we create new neurocircuitry in the brain? You know, what do we have to do? Now, there's no doubt if you think you suffer from sex addiction, you can feel free to give me a call at 646-595-3284. That's the call-in number for the show. It's anonymous. You don't have to give your real name, and I'll take your call directly. Again, that number is 646-595-3284. This is the only show designated specifically for sexual addiction, and I want to be available to you. And if for some reason you're uncomfortable with calling the show, you can always email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. And you can go to iTunes and download every show that I've done. I have over 60 shows in the queue. And go to iTunes and either put in Sex Help with Carol the Coach or Sexual Addiction, and my show will come up. Subscribe for free. Yes, you heard it, for free. And find out what the leading experts in the field of love and sexual addiction are saying that may be necessary to take your life to the next level and to help you heal from this disorder that chronically needs to be managed. You know, I say heal, but that doesn't mean that sexual addiction goes away. But it does mean in the 3 to 5 years that you need to work specifically on managing the illness, you too can make your life better, can decrease the urges and cravings, and can figure out what it takes to have healthy relationships. But again, that's if you work with a certified sexual addictions therapist, you go to 12-step meetings, you get yourself a sponsor, you do bibliotherapy, you enlist all the tools in the toolbox to make your life better. And I guarantee you this, and this is my promise to you, and I would not steer you wrong. Carol the Coach would never steer you wrong. I may not have all the answers, but one thing I do believe is if you work all the steps and you do it with consistency and predictability, not only will you be able to manage this illness, but you will get very healthy. You will have healthier relationships. You'll sustain better relationships. And maybe for the first time in your life, you will feel joy, happiness, gratitude, and all those feelings that we are all entitled to feel, but possibly never learn that because our childhoods were tough and rough. If you're interested in finding a certified sexual addictions therapist, go to www.sexhelp.com, put in your zip code, and you'll pull up the closest therapist in your area. And if there isn't a therapist in your area, then what I would really encourage you to do is look at the descriptions and find out who Skypes or who does phone coaching so that they can at least give you some directives so that you can make your life healthier as you then determine how to access a 12-step group or the proper bibliotherapy to get your life going. But trust me now, it's never just one thing. You have to have an accumulation of a variety of resources. I wish I could tell you that just seeing a certified sexual addictions therapist was enough, but it's not. You got to be doing your work. You got to be doing your reading. You've got to be going to group. You've got to have a good sponsor. You've got to be making the calls. But I promise your life will never be better if you do the work. And, you know, they say as a therapist, you should never make promises, but that's what I guarantee. If you do the work, it absolutely works. And now I have Audrey Tate on the line, and as I indicated before, she has written a number of books to help you with sexual addiction, as well as to help you with recovery and forgiveness. So, Audrey, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you have just spent an entire lifetime creating a lot of these books, and I'm curious, what made you go into the field of writing about sexual addiction as well as other addictions?
Well, my master's degree is in addiction, and I have family history of addiction that affects the family system down through the years, even though it's changed. And so I speak from my heart. I speak from my experience and from my training. And I enjoy the work that I do.
Well, and you can tell in your writing that you enjoy it. The books are invigorating. They leave the reader with a lot of hope. And you can tell that you really understand trauma. And you say that is so much a part of addictions, including sexual addictions. So can I ask you, what do you think is the relationship of trauma and sex addiction? I mean, tell me about that relationship from your point of view.
Well, a lot of times there's a trauma in the past. And sometimes we don't even know that there's been a trauma because it can be in what we call the preverbal state, which is sort of that 0 to 3. It could even be in the mother's womb. And that trauma we carry with us, and we don't really realize how we carry it with us. And it affects a lot of things that we do, almost everything we do in life, even our reactions that are coming out in us now. It goes back to some way we've reacted to something in the past. And trauma really is, it's for people who feel like they've been traumatized, because a traumatic event to somebody could be something that they didn't react to. They have a healthy lifestyle. They had healthy parents that helped them integrate it so that they don't have, you know, issues with their caregiver. And so those things from the past we bring into our life. Addiction is a flight mechanism. So that fleeing from the scene, we have those animal responses that the animals have. And so that flight response leads into addiction, which is a flight away from the emotions and stuffing of the emotions.
And so these people that have that response, what might you see them do or not do? I mean, what do you mean, a flight? Because, you know, we hear flight, fight, or freeze.
Yes. Correct. So somebody who's fleeing, they're leaving what's going on in their life. They're not engaged. If something happens that they have a strong emotional reaction again to, they might walk away from it. They might just leave the scene. The person who's in a car accident, and they leave. You know, they've caused the accident, but they don't want to deal with it, so they leave. Maybe they've been drinking, so they just leave it. They could be in a conversation. They get up and walk out. They don't take responsibility for what's going on. They don't do the things that they need to do. They're not always engaged in their job the way they should be. So those are some of the things that you might see happening in the everyday life now, currently.
Okay, and so if we see these kind of behaviors, how does that correlate with sexual addiction?
Well, I think it was Patrick Carnes or some of the people in the sexual addiction field. I think it was like approximately 60% they found in research of people with sexual addiction that are they have that response. And so with sexual addiction, when you take and go into pornography or some other type of acting out, it's a trauma repetition. So the trauma that happened, you see that being played out. So I think one of the ones that we see the most is something happening that, you know, you show me, I'll show you, you know, during childhood when kids are showing each other their sex organs. Then if that gets truncated somehow in a trauma, then see, you know, the flasher out on the street. Now it's different. It could be in a, you know, it could be on the internet somehow that they're flashing themselves. It doesn't have to exactly be their sex organs, they're flashing, but, you know. So we see that trauma repetition that happens so often, especially in the sexual addiction.
Well, that makes sense. And, you know, one of the things that I've really noticed is that so many people who have sexual addiction do really have earlier traumas, whether they are sexually related and then they become kind of fixated, or they have some sort of trauma that they end up feeling a lot of anger about. And then we call it eroticized rage, where they start acting out their anger by either hurting themselves or objectifying others or degrading others. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, do you see much of that in your own practice?
I see some of it. I think the thing we have to remember is with trauma, it's a broken boundary. It's more than a broken boundary. It's severe. It goes to our very core. And a broken boundary is where that anger and that rage comes from. So if we don't deal with the anger and the rage in healthy ways and understand what it is, then it just goes on and becomes more and more, because with any addiction, we know that we need more of it for it to be an addiction, and we can't let it go. It's quite an interesting proposition to really take a hold of that sexual addiction issue.
Absolutely. And then, so let's go back to the fact that you definitely see a correlation between trauma and sexual addiction. What about pornography? What do you think is at the basis or the foundation for people that develop a pornography addiction?
Well, pornography is an escape mechanism, really, in a sense, also. It's an intimacy disorder, which we know from research. But pornography is also a gateway drug, just like alcohol. So it kind of is a gateway to lead to other types of sexual addiction, other sexual acting out. I mean, some people even go from pornography into child pornography. And then now we have the whole issue with the difference between sexting and child pornography. And somehow being able to have a relationship with myself or with others or my higher power has become an issue. So I can't really let you know authentically who I am. And that goes for most of the addictions. I don't want, you know, if you knew who I really was inside, my authentic self, you wouldn't like me. You wouldn't be able to love me or, you know, tolerate me. And so pornography, even though it seems like there's nothing wrong with it, and we live in a highly sexualized society, and you see it on billboards and everywhere, it can lead very fast, actually, to other sexual addictions. I mean, the thing we have to remember with sexual addiction, we process those images of sexual, those sexual images faster than any other image in our brain. It's just the way our brain is wired. So
now, will you say that again? Because that's an important key to understanding how pornography in and of itself can become addiction. So one more time, will you explain that how fast-growing that is, and say that one more time?
Well, when it comes to sexual images, and this is just normal, this is the way we are, it's the way our brain is wired, those images are processed faster than any other image in our brain. And there's nothing we can do about that. We can't change it. It's who we are. There's nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly normal. But we can take that processing, because it's processed so fast, it can lead to an addiction a lot faster than some of the other addictions. And the same with pornography. It's all over in our society. We see it every day. We see it, you know, just in somebody walking by, just the way they walk could be, you know, a sexual image for somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you have learned that pornography is so quickly processed because of all the many images that infiltrate the brain, and that in and of itself can create an addictive response. You know, I know that one of the things that I'm very aware of is that they're making movies now that simulate pornography, in that there are many, many images in a 3-minute period, in part because that actively captivates the brain and makes you much more aware and wanting more and more of that movie. And so it makes sense that if you're sexualizing images, the same thing is going to happen.
If it's an issue with you, if it's, you know, something that catches you and becomes addictive for you, if the trauma is already there and there's trauma repetition, it can catch on. I mean, it doesn't have to just be the pornography. It could be, you know, many other things that sexualize people.
Good point. Now, what about the spouses of addicts, including sex addicts? What do you see as being their needs?
Well, there's a number of needs that they have. The first need is finding themselves. A lot of times they end up in a relationship with an addict because they've had trauma past themselves. And they might not really realize it. They might come from, if they're older, they might come from families of secrets where you just don't talk about that. So there's been no healing. The thing is, we have mirrored neurons in our brain, and there's new research coming out on that. But we can sense from person to person what's happening. It's just like the therapist can sense what's happening in the person or in the client before the client really knows what's happening subconsciously with them. And so the partners, they find sex addicts. They might not even know they're a sex addict, but they have needs. If you listen to Al-Anon, they are actually sicker than the person who's the addict. The thing with the partner is they're the type of person a lot of times who takes what the addict sprays out there, and a lot of times it's all that the partner takes in. So they think it's all their fault, and they take that in, so they don't know who they are themselves, what they like, what they don't like. And so they need just as much help as the person who's actually the addict. And in recovery, we find that they're actually maybe 6 months ahead of the addict in the recovery process. And they have a lot of decisions that they have to take because they end up being responsible for the kids because they're not responsible in the situation. So it's like, if in this relationship, do I need to stay? Do I need to leave? I might not know all that's going on. One of the greatest needs and one of the hardest things for partners to do is to be tested sexually, because for sexually transmitted diseases, because they might have no idea what their partner is doing. They might even find out the first time they have a pap smear that's not normal, that, oh, there's an issue here, when they totally trusted their partner. But the partner, especially with sexual addiction and pornography, it's so easy to hide.
Mm-hmm.
So those are, you know, some of my concerns. And my concern is that they seek treatment, whether their spouse seeks treatment or not, so that they can become the person that they want themselves to be, that they can find the healing and they can move on and they can have an incredibly fulfilling life.
Well, and I agree. I think that they deal with their own inadequacies and wonder what they could have done to have prevented this, as most loved ones of any type of addict does. And then in addition to that, they almost become hypervigilant because they want to protect themselves. They do not want to believe that this can happen again. And so they're very anxious, and it's all a protective device. And, you know, let's face it, what we try to get people to do is to live as normal of lives as possible. And yet with addiction, there is a new normal, and that new normal is seeking support in ways they never would have thought they would have had to resort to, such as support groups and therapists and, you know, sponsors.
Exactly. Those are all the important issues of it, and doing the work and finding themselves, and, you know, that's all. So anyone who would let them find themselves and not be swamped by somebody else's addiction, learn where their boundaries need to be, and I will only tolerate this much, and you relapse this many times, or this becomes an issue, I will not stay here, and I will protect my children, you know, if I need to, you know, their sexual addiction. And, you know, there's a partner who's acting up with his own kids.
Actually, Audrey, you're breaking up just a little bit, so I'm going to ask you to talk directly into the phone, and I'm sure you're standing still, but for whatever reason, you're breaking up a little bit, so would you repeat yourself one more time there, because that was important information for the partner.
Okay. Try that again. Is this better?
That's much better, yes.
I'm on a cell phone, so it will break up occasionally.
Right.
I applaud any partner who goes out there and gets the help that she needs and becomes the person she wants to be, and makes a life for herself and for her children and protects her children. And the other part that I was talking about in there is the fact that, you know, the woman or the partner ends up being responsible for the children. And if there's somebody in the home that is acting out sexually with the children, then that is a really difficult situation that needs to be dealt with. That's an emergency that's like, we got to leave here now. Where are we going to go find help? And most places across North America, there are places that you can go, women's shelters. If not, there's, you know, the next city over, town over, there's usually a women's shelter that you can go, and they have all the resources that you need to help you go from where you are to where you need to be. And I applaud women who take those steps to protect themselves and their children and find their boundaries and where they need to be.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that 100%. Now, obviously you work with addicts as well as you work with partners, and what made you decide to reach out on a much more global nature and to write books about trauma and healing and forgiveness and letting go?
It was a time factor. I had the time to spend on it, so I went. That's the part of the business for me that's going on right now that I'm working on. And so I just, it comes from my heart. I've been there. I know what it's like. And so reaching out to help people, sometimes you can't afford to see a therapist. This, you know, talk radio is excellent. 12-step groups are great, but some people do not want to go to 12-step groups. Some places, they don't recommend 12-step groups. So there are other ways to find recovery, and when I was looking for it, there wasn't a lot there. And so I have spent a lot of time, you know, especially on that partner side, writing stuff. I mean, what I write is good for both the addict and the partner, but there's just so much that you can't even, in sessions, you can't explain it all on, you know, one or in group or whatever, and that having a having the books there, it goes into deeper thoughts. And my, the books that I've done on reflective meditations are all so that you take a thought, you read a short thought for the day, and then you contemplate and see how that affects me. So it's an adjunct for people who maybe can't afford recovery. A lot of my books are for Kindle on the, at Amazon, and anybody can get a free Kindle app. So if you've got a computer, if you've got an internet connection, you can get the books.
Wow. Okay, so to get your books, they can go to Amazon.com and they can download a free Kindle app. And once they've downloaded that free Kindle app, they can buy your books. And I've looked on that site, and, you know, your books go for as little as $3.99. I mean, they are so affordable.
Yes, that is correct. I kept it that way on purpose. So that people could afford them.
Well, that's fantastic, because truly, you're absolutely right. Some people can't afford therapy, or they're not in the market for it. Or there aren't those groups or avenues available, and so you got to use whatever resources that are available to you. So give us an example of one of the meditations and how one might apply that to their daily life.
Okay, well, the series, there's a series of three on the what I call the trauma trilogy. Reflective meditations, unraveling my trauma. Reflective meditations, healing my trauma. Reflective meditations, letting go, forgiveness. So in the letting go, there's several chapters on reconciliation, what forgiveness is, what it is not. So the one on forgiveness, what forgiveness is letting go. It's a letting go for me emotionally of my emotions that tie me up. So somebody did something and I didn't like it, so they crossed the boundary for me, whether it was spoken or unspoken, and I didn't like it. So how am I going to react to that? How am I going to let go of that? And that is the letting go of the emotions that go around and round and round in my head and keep me stuck. You can go read the definition in the dictionary. So I get to think about that concepts all day long. How is that going to affect me? Am I going to let these emotions roll and roll and roll, or can I let them go? And there's many different ones in there that help explain, you know, what forgiveness is. Like, forgiveness is not me saying I'm sorry when I'm still really mad and angry at the other person.
Right.
So you can take that and you can think about that all day long, and how does that affect me, and what can I do about that? So one of the stories I tell about me in one of the books, I had a conversation with Medical Benefits, the company, and they're going, oh, well, you gave me the wrong numbers the first time. And then they're going, no, you didn't submit that, when I know I submitted that paper, because I know the company had to have got it even though they didn't put it in their system. And so it was kind of like, this is a person who's blaming me for what I know was not true. And it was like, okay, I can just let that go. She's got an issue. I'll probably never talk to her again. Like, there's no sense getting mad over her.
Right.
So there's one example. Another example I use is, like, I go into a lot of the breathing techniques that one needs for calming down, because when we get angry, our emotions go overboard. And so I was in a place, and this is in one of those three books, I was in a place where somebody started talking about something that was very emotional to me, and it's like I was to the point where I was ready to not just cry, but heave and sigh and moan and groan. And so I said to myself, I know what I need to do. I can sit up straight with my posture, and I can start breathing from my diaphragm, and I can start feeling my back on the back of the chair and my legs on the chair and my feet flat on the floor, and I can go around and look the name that's in the room so I don't become disassociated. And I calm myself down. And that works time and time again. I dealt with those emotions later in a safer place.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's in my book. And how to do those things, there's a lot more details in those three books. So even that in itself, you know, even just knowing another place I talk about standing up, because that gets the left prefrontal cortex on board, and by getting that on board, it helps, you know, calm the system down. Or just going and lying on your stomach somewhere, in your bed, on a couch, on the floor, on the grass, that automatically brings the deep breathing to calm the system down. So those are snippets of a few daily meditations that one can take and think about that can have a huge impact with the trauma element.
Well, absolutely. And when you said that about the prefrontal cortex, how do you get that in alignment? What would you tell somebody to do? Because obviously the advice you're giving people are things that they absolutely can control.
Oh, exactly. Standing up. So if you're in a situation, stand up and go to the bathroom, go get a glass of water, stand up and go for a walk, say, I need to take a break. That just gets that left side of the brain coming in. The left side of the brain is the thinking, analytical side of the brain. The right side is the emotional side. So, you know, it takes longer to get the left side of the brain on board. So if you stand up and go somewhere and do something, you get that on board, so it calms you down so that you can actually go back in there and have a conversation with that person. Because sometimes when we're in trauma, we shut that left side of the brain down with the strong emotions, and then we can't think. We might freeze, we might, you know, submit. It's keeping that thinking part of the brain on board so that we can make decisions. So this is what these breathing things are doing to help be able to make good decisions.
Well, absolutely. And then that obviously feels empowering. It's something that is working for you. And as a result, you exude more confidence and you're more empowered and you're less likely to feel the victim.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what people need to feel.
Absolutely. Uh-oh, you're breaking up again.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Absolutely. And it's empowering, like you say it is, and we don't have to be the victim time and time and time again. We can learn that we can be the person we were meant to be.
Fantastic. So now, which book, I'm just curious, which book do you feel resonates the most with your readers? Do you think readers want to figure out how to heal the trauma, or are they needing to feel more like letting go of forgiveness? I mean, what speaks to them the most?
Well, I think they all speak, and letting go of forgiveness is kind of like the end of the pathway. If you don't understand what's happening, once you get that understanding and unraveling my trauma, it's hard to really know what's going on in your life. And then, you know, healing the trauma is building on that, unraveling the trauma, healing it, you know, how to heal it, what to do with it. And then letting go, forgiveness is really the last thing that comes into the play. So it's kind of hard to pick out one book. It depends where you are in your walk. You know, you're going to learn new things even in Unraveling My Trauma, and you might find that you don't take it as a day-to-day read and you just read the whole thing through and get what you need if you've been, you know, on this path for 3 or 4 years for healing. That way, forgiveness, letting go would speak to you. But if you're just starting out and just starting with trauma, then you want to start with Unraveling My Trauma.
Okay, so if you're...
Go ahead.
Just... getting in touch with the fact that you do have trauma and you need to acknowledge it and you need to kind of explore, that is the best book for you. And you know, part of me knew that was an unfair question. It's kind of like saying, which kid do you prefer the most? You love all the books, and they're all helpful depending on what stage the person's in.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so now I want to ask you, obviously, you when you're talking about letting go and forgiveness, there are undeniable boundaries around forgiveness. So can you share what some of those boundaries are?
I think the first thing is knowing that forgiveness is for me. So as soon as I know it's for me and I can work through it and I can let go, that's that becomes my definition. So then from there I can go, I don't want to be hurt again. So what boundaries have been broken that have caused me to be in a situation where I need forgiveness? And when we're looking at that question, we have to look at the false forgiveness, because I think people don't understand that there's a component of false forgiveness. Because the victim who was sexually abused as a child, who feels victimized and who feels like it's all their fault and have been made to feel that it was all their fault, or the person who is married to a sex addict who is making them feel guilty all the time, like their addiction is their fault when it's not their fault, then realizing that that false forgiveness is not mine to bear, even though for many we have bore that false needing of forgiveness for so long. And then the other boundaries that come into play. There may never be restitution when it comes to forgiveness. If the other person has violated me sexually, it's really hard to take that back. But you can still heal that yourself if you're the victim. Consequences, people still need to suffer the consequences of their actions. If somebody has done something illegal, then it needs to be reported. So there still needs to be consequences to their actions. If they're, you know, like I said, the criminal stuff, that needs to be. And so realizing some of these, reconciliation is another one. If somebody has violated your sexual boundaries or any boundaries, there may be never be reconciliation in that relationship. You may never be a friend with that person again, depending on the situation. It might be very difficult if it's, you know, incest in the family, but there still needs to be some type of boundary to keep that person safe. At the end of all that, there may come a time when you find gratitude. This may not be for the event that happened, but it can be for what has changed in your life, the better person that you have become. And for me, I'm not grateful for the trauma that I have gone through for in the fact of what actually happened, but I am glad for the person that I personally have become. And that, I think, is where gratitude may or may not come into it. So quickly, there's your boundaries.
Well, I think it's so important for people to understand boundaries. And so those are some excellent guidelines. Obviously, safety is one of them, self-protection.
Yes.
And really standing up for yourself and knowing what's healthy and what isn't. And so letting go and forgiveness and boundaries around that, your books teach people very simply what those boundaries are.
Exactly.
So now what are some of the books that you have available, one more time, and what is your goal for the reader?
Well, my goal for the reader is for them to be able to find themselves, to learn to believe in themselves, to be unstuck with, to become unstuck so that they can move forward in life. So to take one meditation a day and read it and see how that helps them or how that affects them. So the trauma trilogy is Reflective Meditations, Unraveling My Trauma, Reflective Meditations, Healing My Trauma, Reflective Meditations, Letting Go Forgiveness. And then when you go beyond that, there's the Reflective Meditations, Believing in Myself, Reflective Meditations, Understanding My Authentic Self, Reflective Meditations, Understanding My Boundaries, And those are all the books that are you can find on for the Kindle. My hardcover book, which is also available for Kindle, is I Am Wonderfully Me, Positive Affirmations for Me, Volume 1, and it's got my photography, so each picture is like two-thirds. It's a mother meditation book. It's got an affirmation in it that you can say to help retrain all those old tapes, you know, that we say to ourselves in different ways. I hate myself, I'm worthless, I'm unlovable, and so those are my books.
Okay, and one more time, they can go to Amazon.com to get any of those books. And are they all e-books, or can they buy them in hard copy?
They're all e-books right now. And the one that's the hardcover is I'm Wonderfully Me, Positive Affirmations for Me, Volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
And it is in a hardcover book.
Okay. Now, what other books are you working on currently?
I'm working on Volume 2 of I Am Wonderfully Me, Positive Affirmations, so that should be out in the next 4 to 6 months. The other reflective meditation book that I'm working on is Reflective Meditations, Loving Myself, which for some people is a concept that is foreign to them. But I need to respect myself and love myself before I can reach out and give back to others. So in the process of the 12 steps, loving myself is part of that growing aspect. But really, before I can reach out and give back to people in that community or any community, I need to be able to inwardly know who I am and love myself.
Oh, 100%. Oh. So now, how can my listeners find out more about you, your counseling programs, and your website, and the books?
Okay, the Amazon.com, if they put in Audrey Tait, and that's T-A-I-T, and if they put MS after, that stands for a Master of Science, that will bring me up. If you just put in Audrey Tait, you'll get other people who have written books, too, by the same name. My website is inspirationalinsightscounseling.com, and that's spelled with two L's. That's the Canadian or British way of spelling it.
Okay.
And there is a place on the website where you can send an email, and or you can use info@inspirationalinsightscounseling.com. I am available to do Skype sessions across Canada, and that is how you can find more about me. For those who are outside of the United States, my books are available around the world, ebook with Amazon, so whether you go to Amazon. I don't know if it's UK or exactly how they put it in, is Amazon.com. So those books are available around the world, the ebooks.
I just can't imagine how gratifying that must be to know that you're helping people globally all around the world, in part based on your own experience and in part, you know, your wisdom being a certified sexual addictions therapist. Audrey Tait, I so appreciate you giving us this information. You give people a lot of hope, strength, and recovery, and that's what this show is about. Anything you want to leave the listeners with before we end tonight?
You are the most important person in your life. You are the person to look after before spouses, before children. You are it, and you are an awesome person.
Well, thank you so much, because I do believe whether you're an addict or the spouse of an addict, that is by far the most important thing to learn. So I appreciate your wisdom and hope to talk to you again real soon.
Yes, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Okay. Take care, Audrey. All right.
You too.
So as you can see, she's an amazing woman with a lot of knowledge and really works hard imparting her wisdom so that others can reap the benefits. And you heard her say she does Skype, which means that she is available to talk with you via Skype. If you live in an area whereby you can't get to a certified sexual addictions therapist, she is the go-to person for that. So I highly recommend that you Google her. And again, she gave you that website so that you can obviously get to her directly. And again, she is owner and director of Inspirational Insights Counseling out of Red Deer, Alberta. And she is not only a CSAT, but she's a CMAT also. She's the owner and director of Inspirational Insights Counseling. So you can Google that and find her there. So next week, we're going to be interviewing a very infamous doctor over at the Meadows Treatment Center. And obviously, we are so excited when we get to work with the Meadows because they are the go-to facility for drug, alcohol, and sex addiction. Dr. Borshin is going to be talking about trauma and how to heal. I'm really looking forward to talking with the doctor. So stay tuned next week, same time, same place, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And remember, you can always email me your questions at carolthecoach@AOL.com or go to my own website, either carolthecoach.com or Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And don't forget, go to iTunes and download all my shows. You can subscribe free, or you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com, put in Carol the Coach, and download them there. So as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times. I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. Use Audrey's words of wisdom and take care of you. And we will see you again next week. Have a great day.